Everyone knows about the five senses, but how many of us take them for granted on a daily basis? Well, take them for granted until something changes. Maybe your vision gets a little fuzzy, or you're constantly enlarging your screen so you can see the words. Maybe you notice a ringing in your ears, or maybe you just aren't feeling and smelling things the way you used to. You might attribute them to age, but did you know that your senses can signal the potential of dementia?
Hi, I'm Dr. Shabnam Das Kaur. I'm a functional medicine doctor and certified tiny habits coach. I teach people how to improve their focus, get rid of brain fog, and reduce their risk of dementia.
And I'm Andrea Spiros. I'm a behavior design consultant and professional speaker. I work with organizations to harness the power of high performance habits to increase engagement, resilience, and well-being. So let's talk about the five senses. Vision, hearing, and sense of smell, they seem disconnected to a lot of people. They're all separate. But why are they important?
Yeah, I mean, for a long time, we didn't think of vision, hearing, and smell as, you know, these are, yes, we know they're very important because they are the primary senses. We use them to figure out how, our environment, because our primary function and the primary function of the brain is to make sure that we are safe, and we need all those three senses to know whether we are safe or not. So, recently, there have been quite a lot of studies which have shown that people who have poor vision, people who have lost their sense of smell, or they have lost their hearing, all those three groups of people are at a higher risk for dementias like Alzheimer's. And Alzheimer's is the commonest form of dementia, but there are others as well. But we usually talk about Alzheimer's and dementia kind of interchangeably. But what is interesting, Andrea, is, you know, sometimes it's like, it's not just finding the problem. We also need to know whether solving for those problems will help reduce the risk of dementia. Because you and I always talk about solutions. We want to give a message of hope. So yes, solving for all those three conditions have shown that they can reduce our risk for dementia, and that is really good news.
And that's exciting news too, because I think so many people listening out there are thinking, well, my vision's going, that's just the way it is, and it's all about just vision. Or, well, yeah, I don't hear as well. I went to a lot of concerts when I was younger and I didn't wear ear protection, and that's just about that. But what you're saying is these can be indicators of potential dementia down the line, and by solving for them, by improving vision, by improving your hearing, by, you know, solving whatever, finding whatever root cause is actually contributing to that, that it can actually reduce your risk of dementia. And that is a huge sense of hope for so many people who attribute these things to being out of their control.
Yeah. And, you know, when it comes to vision, Andrea, I mean, we think of not being able to see at all. But the other problem that really bothers me, and I started asking people about their vision now, I'm sure you know a lot of, particularly women, who don't like wearing their glasses, even if they need them, because of various reasons. Sometimes some of them will say, I keep forgetting, mine is not comfortable. But the fact is, you know, when we can't see properly, one problem is the brain gets extra load. So the cognitive burden goes up, and the brain has to work extra hard to make sense of the environment. And we don't need to give that extra load to the brain, because the brain already has to do a lot of wonderful things. And, you know, Andrea, when I was talking to some people, and one lady said, oh, I don't like wearing my glasses. I said, don't you have a problem? Because I know you are supposed to wear your glasses all the time. That's what your doctor told you. And she says, no, I can see okay. I can't see the fine, like I can't see someone's eyes, but I know where the eyes are. I said, but did you know what it does to your brain? She says, I had no idea. I said, no, this is going to raise your risk for dementia.
It's amazing how when people, well, we often talk that information doesn't always lead to action, but that's only when you have a preconceived attitude around that. Sometimes we can get new information that changes our actions because we didn't have a formed attitude around it. And I think a great analogy here is that when you're without your glasses and you need them, it is like walking around with weights or a weighted vest. Now, if you want to walk around with a weighted vest for your walk because you think it's healthy, that's great. But when you are not using your glasses and you need them, it is like wearing weights that you don't need and making everything harder to do and using up more energy for your brain. And that can contribute not only to dementia down the line, but also just a feeling of fatigue.
Oh, absolutely. I recently, you know, experienced it personally because my numbers changed. And as you know, it takes a long time for new lenses to be made. So I got my near one, the work one, which is not meant for distant vision. And my other one, my progressives are not ready yet. So when I switch between my two lenses, I'm like, for some time, it's all confusing. It's like, I don't see clearly. And I'm thinking, oh my God, now I know what this means.
Yeah, it's really profound. And now that we're mentioning it, if you are one of those people who isn't wearing their glasses, just do a little bit of an experiment. Try wearing your glasses very consistently for a day. Notice how you feel. Try just doing what you normally do and notice how you feel. And let your own body and your own energy level be your guide to what you want to do more of. So let's talk about some of the other.
Andrea, you know, before we move ahead to the next one with vision, very important is if you have cataract. So studies have shown that now cataract is basically with age. Sometimes it's also in people who have diabetes or who have used steroids. They may have early cataract. Basically, the lens, the normal natural lens in the eye is such a sophisticated organ, I tell you. The natural lens in the eye becomes sort of clouded, so it doesn't work as well. And sometimes people may find that they have rapid change in their numbers. And when they go to the optometrist or the doctor, they tell them that, okay, you have early cataract. So that is something important to keep in mind. Another factor that I want to highlight is sometimes people with young onset dementia, and I know we are going to do an episode on young onset dementia. So young onset dementia is dementia in people who are younger than 65 years. What they found is they would go to their optometrist very often saying that I have problem with vision. And the optometrist would tell them, your numbers are okay. This is not a, you know, you don't have a problem with this. It could be, is it a mental health problem? It is something else. But it was actually a red flag for dementia diagnosis. And one of the sad things with a lot of not only early onset dementia, also with later dementia, is sometimes it takes a long time for diagnosis. So this is a red flag. If you are someone who has vision problems and you feel that you can't see as well, maybe it's time to get a proper, you know, brain assessment done, because it could be a red flag for something down the line. So that is,
and you're
something.
Catching it early. Right. Yeah. And you want to catch it early so then you have more agency to head it off, because this is not you have it and there's nothing you can do about it. There are many, many things. Like, listen to a lot of the rest of our podcasts, forthcoming and previous. We're always about solution. There's nothing done until it's done. So should we just dive deeper, a little bit more deeply into vision? Or do you want to go back and talk about some of the others?
I think we could move to the others, because basically we've already said that if you have a problem with vision, number one, go and get the solutions, because solving for vision problems can help your brain function better. And it doesn't even have to be dementia down the line. Even like tomorrow, it could function better.
Yeah, it could actually raise your energy level, right? If you're not using all your energy just to see, then you probably have a lot of energies to do other fun things in your life. So let's talk about hearing loss and dementia. And you know, I will share personally that I did go to a lot of concerts when I was younger, and I did not wear ear protection. And I started wearing ear protection probably well after college, when I got back from a concert and I realized I couldn't hear the sizzling of the eggs I was making, and I burned them. And so from then on, I never realized hearing was important to cooking until that moment. And from then on, I use hearing protection, musicians' earplugs, whenever I go to any concert or any loud event. But let's talk about how that relates to dementia.
So again, like I said at the beginning, studies have shown that when people have hearing loss, which is not corrected, that can be a risk factor for dementia. And the reason is, and again, if they get hearing aids or they find out why the hearing is a problem and get something to help them get that treated, the risk for dementia goes down. So again, there are solutions. It's not just we find a problem, there's nothing you can do. With hearing, what happens is, one of the things we talked about earlier is loneliness and social isolation. So sometimes when people don't hear well, they start disengaging from people around them. And that contributes to not just, you know, that contributes to a risk, higher risk for dementia down the line. But the problem is, it's the hearing which is getting in the way for, you know, them to have a conversation. Because what would normally happen, Andrea, I'm sure you've seen a lot of people as well. My 94-year-old mother-in-law, she's hard of hearing. She got a hearing aid and she didn't want to use it at all. So we just said, okay, let her be. But she doesn't engage with everyone else because she can't hear. And, you know, when you're screaming at the top of your voice, the whole atmosphere in the house is like, you know, it's not at all pleasant.
Or repeating yourself. And even if you know someone is hard of hearing and they're not, it's not that they're just not listening. It can be hard on you to repeat yourself constantly. It can lead to frustration. And also, people don't realize, because we're not taught, that you don't just have to yell to speak more loudly. You can project a little more deeply or enunciate more clearly in order for people who are hard of hearing. But either way, the atmosphere is stressful. And then the people who have the hearing issue definitely aren't getting the stimulation from the conversations, the connection, and things like that. And it can be a burden. I have a similar situation. My dad, actually, he got hearing aids so that he could participate, and he remained active and vital. My mom, on the other hand, is resistant to doing that, and it makes it harder for her. I notice sometimes that she acts like she understands what we're saying, but I can tell that she is not. And that has got to be a burden for her, pretending to understand when she doesn't, right? Yeah. And then we want to engage with her, but she doesn't want to wear her hearing aids. You know, and there's a lot of new ones out there now. There's a lot of new ones with Bluetooth. You can put them on the other side of the room so that you can hear the conversation over there clearly. You can tune out background noise if you're at a crowded place. There's a lot of new technology out there that makes them a little easier to use and more effective. But I understandably, people relate them with age and don't want to feel or be old, when really they're contributing to their decline.
Absolutely. And, you know, Andrea, and a lot of the times people might, you are perceptive, you know that if your mother has a problem with hearing, this may be, you know, it may get in the way of your communication, but not everyone is so aware. So number one is, if you have loved ones or you're meeting someone who seems to be, what I would say, not their usual self, maybe it's something as simple as a hearing problem. But the other thing, Andrea, you mentioned about, you know, music concerts. Just 2 days ago, I went to watch a movie with my son, and I realized, oh my God, because at home, the TV is like, I can adjust the volume.
I
felt it was so loud, and I'm like digging into my purse looking for earplugs. And I thought, oh, why did I leave? I carry earplugs in every purse. somehow I missed out or I couldn't dig it out in the darkness. I said, note to self, make sure you have earplugs in every bag. And it's not, and not just movie halls. I remember going to a wedding in India. And oh my God, this was like, it was a big shock because I said, no, I have to protect my hearing. So the point is, yes, you might look a little funny with, you know, earplugs, but you are saving weight.
Right. And most of the time you can't even really see them. And what people don't realize, what people don't realize about earplugs is that you can hear actually a little better with them and without them. Especially if you, there's some inexpensive musicians earplugs that are really helpful for that. And you can actually hear what you need to hear. It filters out the din. And this is a day and age where people are more taking care of themselves. And, you know, a lot of times too, when I think there's this, even though it would ultimately be helpful, but sometimes people aren't hearing and it's a hearing issue. It's not necessarily a dementia issue yet. And people think, family members think it's dementia and then treat them like they have dementia, that there's nothing they can do about it, as opposed to solving the problem. So we want to give you a frame of things to think about. And you can notice from their context too, if you go to their home and the TV, the radio, or whatever they're, you know, listening to, their computer, if you're like my mom who's 92 and, you know, works a computer and streams on there, if their type font is really big, right? You might know they have a vision issue. If their sound is really loud, you might realize they have a hearing issue, right? If their house is really bright too, they might have a vision issue as well. So you can get some context cues, even if you're not experiencing that in the moment with them too.
Yeah. It's like, I think most importantly is rather than dismissing something off as, oh, she's just old or he's just getting older, there could be other simpler solutions, which, you know, unless you're really aware of what is going on, very often we miss that. And Andrea, you brought up something very important about the information action fallacy we talk about. Sometimes people don't have the information to know what to look for. You know?
Exactly. And that can lead to change. If you didn't know that a plant needed to be watered every day, then simply telling you, oh, this plant needs to be watered every day might actually change your actions, right? You know, so it's not absolute. It's just more that people don't act on information, if they already have an existing attitude about it. And so we're giving you some information that you probably don't have an existing attitude around and you may not know. And then we can help you decide what actions to take around them. And a lot of these are just really small actions of, you know, just checking in with your loved ones or with yourself if this is for you, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I noticed that I'm pinching the screen. I mean, it can be very hard in these days. It can be very easy to mask a vision issue in these days because you can pinch everything to make it bigger. And it wasn't really until I looked at a food label and realized I couldn't read it that I realized I had been pinching a lot of things on my screen to make them bigger.
It happened with me about 2 years ago. You know, I realized, why do I need to keep zooming on my iPad when I'm reading? I said, I need to get my eyes checked.
Right. And so if you are zooming in on your iPad or your device, that might mean that you need to get your vision checked, right? Yeah. And we're not going to stop you from zooming, but given what we've shared, that this could be, by solving your vision issue, you can prevent some dementia down the line. You may want to explore that avenue by making an appointment with your vision specialist. Should we talk about sense of smell? Because I think that is one that people, I think that's the sense that we most take for granted. Honestly. Yeah.
So before we go ahead with smell, one thing I wanted to point out is in the show notes, I'm going to share a free app. It's by the World Health Organization. So you can use that app on your phone with earpods or your phones to test your own hearing. Now, this is not a definitive test, but it's sort of like a screening test. So screening meaning, if you scored low on that test, you need to go to your doctor to talk about, you know, how to get yourself tested for hearing, because normally most family doctors wouldn't really test for hearing unless you complain of like severe hearing loss. So that the name of the app is HearWHO, HearWHO. And I'll add the link to the show notes. It's a free app, free download on iOS as well as Android. So get that done and follow the instructions after that. If you score low in that, need to talk to a doctor to figure out whether you need more advanced testing. So now
here's
the sense of smell. Oh, yeah. That's like...
Yeah, let's think about that.
So smell memories last the longest, you know, Andrea. So I think back to my childhood, and there were some, like, I know some of my mother's cooking. When I get that smell today, it's like, oh, yeah, this is what we used to eat as kids and used to love this and this. I'm sure everyone has those memories, right? Either it's mother or grandmother's baking or something like that.
Exactly. Even the smell of the air when I was a kid. I grew up outside of Chicago. We could tell as kids when it was going to rain by the smell in the air.
Oh yeah, that smell, Andrea. I was in India, and there's some parts of India where monsoon is really heavy. So that first smell of, you know, the earth soaking with the rain, that earthy smell, I can still smell it now that you talk about it.
Yeah, it's the sense of smell. They really, really, really can embed. So, how does it affect the brain?
So again, when they looked at, you know, the sense of smell, when they tested this and they looked at the risk for dementia, they found that people who had a diminished sense of smell, they had a higher risk for dementia. And also another important thing, Andrea, we have two episodes on the APOE4 gene. And remind me to talk about the APOE4 gene and olfaction and smell, the sense of smell as well. So what they found is the sense of smell was less intense in those people and they were at a higher risk for dementia. Now, the interesting thing about the sense of smell is, medical term for sense of smell is olfaction or olfactory receptors. So these receptors, very interestingly, are present not just in the nose. They are present in skin and heart and lungs and kidneys and muscles and testes and sperm. All the areas we never thought would be related to a sense of smell. In fact, some researchers... Right. Yeah. Some researchers in the field think that these receptors have been wrongly named as olfactory receptors. Otherwise, there would have been more research on them. So... This was a few years ago. There was a fascinating study. There was this lady who could actually smell Parkinson's disease. Can you imagine?
I can't imagine. But, you know, it seems like something an animal could do, but not a human. I think we're conditioned to think that animals have heightened sense of smell and things like that.
So Jeez. This story was so fascinating. This lady, her husband... she had a very different sense of smell compared to other people. So she said, my husband's not smelling the same. And she kept saying that for many years. And obviously, nobody made the connection between her sense of her saying that her husband smells different. And this was 10 years before he was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. And then what they did, so I think she talked to some scientists and they said, okay, let us see. Maybe there are some special chemicals that she can smell, but others can't because she has a different sense of smell. And what they did is they got her to smell a bunch of t-shirts. Some of them were of people who had Parkinson's and some of them did not have Parkinson's. Obviously, she was blinded to it. She didn't know which t-shirt was whose. So she had to classify them based on who she thought had Parkinson's. And it was extremely accurate. And the one person who she thought had Parkinson's but actually didn't have was diagnosed with Parkinson's 2 years later. And
that is amazing.
It's so fascinating, you know. And then what the next part of the study has not come out, which they are working on it, because Parkinson's, again, is a fairly common and very serious disease of the nervous system. If people can be diagnosed earlier or suspected earlier. So she thought, you know, 10 years before her husband was diagnosed, she could smell that he was different. So what they're trying to find out is, are there specific chemicals that she smells which could otherwise be detected in maybe blood or clothes or, you know, wherever, which could give us some clues that maybe this person is at a much higher risk for Parkinson's down the line. And Andrea, you mentioned dogs. So years ago, there was a study where dogs could detect melanoma. So malignant melanoma is a very serious skin cancer. Dogs were able to sniff these melanomas way before, you know, humans thought that these had become cancerous. So it's a fascinating world of smell.
It is. And I think it is really, for those of you listening out there, there is science behind this. And it's just beginning. I mean, obviously, there's not a ton of studies out there, but there's some merit to this based on the study that we do have. And so getting things early, go ahead. Getting things early is the key here, however it happens for you.
So the sense of smell, now when it is as severe as, you know, you don't smell the burnt food or the burnt toast, that is quite severe. Now, we are not talking about that extreme sense of, you know, loss of smell. What we can do, there are some smell tests. And again, these tests are not available everywhere. But you could do sort of like an at-home test, which is not super, super, you know, not, I won't say it's like super sensitive like any medical test. But you can, you know, smell some essential oils. And if you can do a blind smelling and see that you can, you know, maybe you can't identify. If you feel that your sense of smell is not as strong as it was before, then you definitely need to go to your doctor. And there are smell tests available. We just recently got the smell test kit into our practice. We haven't started yet. But what is more important is we can actually train our sense of smell. So this is called olfactory training. And I think we talked about that particular study in our APOE4 episode. So few,
we might have.
Yeah, I think it was last year. What they did is a group of people who had, you know, they looked at their brain function and then they did what is called an olfactory training. It sounds really fancy. What they basically did is they smelt, you know, essential oils at night. So they had these timers for 2 hours every night. They had this essential oil diffuser, which had a timer set in already so that it didn't catch fire and dry off and all that. And they used seven different essential oils. And I actually emailed the author whether there was anything special about those oils. And she said, no, it wasn't anything to do with the particular fragrances. It was what people liked. So that means you can try any which ones you like. And every night, I started doing that actually since then. So in the study, what they found is over a period of 6 months when they had people using these olfactory trainings, all they did is put the essential oil diffuser in their bedrooms for 2 hours. There was some beautiful, you know, whichever one they liked. I think they tried a bunch of, and it was the usual essential oils, nothing unique, nothing fancy. And over a period of 6 months, when they tested before and after, okay, granted it was a small study, but then, you know, we are always looking for what are the small little things we can do to improve our brain function. What they found is brain function had improved dramatically. And it's like, I was like blown away with this research.
I remember we talked about this and it was literally just 2 hours a night. You know, they had the diffuser on a timer. And even though it was a small study, the brain function did improve dramatically. And how easy is that to do? One time action, buy a diffuser, another time get, you know, end the oil and then set it on a timer. So it goes off for a couple hours. You can set it off in the middle of your night where you don't have to worry about it. You can just go to sleep and it'll diffuse and you can have increased brain function.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing since I read that study. And of course, I didn't do a before and after brain test, so I can't say anything about whether my brain function improved. But and you know what? Then my husband says, "Oh, it smells so good."
Yeah, and bare minimum, it smells good.
Bare minimum, it smells very good. And of course, added benefit is you might improve your brain function. So again, creating a habit. So now, you know, turning on the diffuser, now I'm thinking, oh, I need a bigger tank in that diffuser so that I don't have to fill it in every 2 days. And I have
essential oil. Now that you're doing it, right? Now that you're doing it, you can maybe upgrade your diffuser. And so you can fill it days or once a week or things like that, and create a habit around that. And we're not saying that you have to go out and build, get the best diffuser. Just try something inexpensive. If this appeals to you, get the oils, which we can put those in the show notes, some of that information, and then see how you like it. And then if you're using as much as Shabnam, then you can either form a habit to fill it up or get a bigger one, or get a timer so it goes off in the middle of the night, no matter what time, if you go to bed late or early. And then do your own before and after.
Yeah. And like you said, you know, at best, what will happen? You get to smell some wonderful stuff. And the other thing is, so I asked the author whether there was anything about using it at night. And she said, no, it was just convenient. So I'm sure even in the day, if you are in an office or somewhere, again, the study did not do that, but that doesn't mean you can't do it.
Right. And you want to obviously be kind to your coworkers. You want to, you know, if some people have smell sensitivities, but if you work in, like you work from home, you might want to set that up in your office, see how it works for you, and let us know. So last thoughts,
great.
Before we wrap up, last thoughts, Shabnam, on, we've talked a lot about the three, you know, vision, hearing, and sense of smell, and how changes in those can be signals that you may be on the path to early onset to dementia, and how addressing those root causes can actually deter or prevent dementia down the line. What last thoughts do you have?
So last thoughts again, Andrea, it's like, you know, I'm sure anyone will wonder, what is the common connection between all these three senses? So one is, of course, the nervous system is related to all of them. So we have an olfactory nerve, we have an optic nerve, and we also have, hearing, the nerve for hearing. So all of them are involved with nerves, and conditions like dementia can call neurodegenerative diseases. So neuro as in nervous system, degenerative is as in degeneration. So that is the common, you know, they are all degenerative diseases. The other thing could be, there could be inflammation, which is, you know, impacting all of them. So neuroinflammation, it could be some other things which we haven't found out yet that is causing a common problem with all the nerves. So it's interesting because for scientists, it's like, oh, if it is this particular thing, if it is neurodegeneration, can we target the neurodegeneration with a particular prescription medication or a group of medications? But as far as I know, we haven't figured that out yet. We don't have one medication or something that's going to address all of them yet. But then all these other strategies we talked about, make sure is your vision okay? And if you are supposed to use glasses, do you use them regularly? And we talked about hearing loss and how to test for your hearing and your sense of smell. So do let us know, you know, whether you've used any of these strategies, whether they've helped, what did you learn? Andrea and I are always interested in knowing, you know, yes, we give you a ton of information. Information alone is never enough. So thing is—
No, it's not.
No.
Take action and let us know what action. We're happy to support you. You can reach out anytime. We really, truly appreciate you listening. We hope we've delivered great value. We hope you take this out into the world and take action on it. Please like, rate, share, and subscribe. You can find all these podcasts at drkarmd.com. That's drkarmd.com/podcasts. Cheers, everyone.
Thank you. Bye now.